Welcome to the Three Film Egos. I'm your hirsute host, Isaac Jensen, and with me as always is Utah's whitest black child, Clayton Godby.
So I might pull up a chair outdoors.
And our resident vegan dreadlocked Portlandier, Ryan Cragen.
I know what words mean.
This is a film discussion podcast where we each pick a film based on a predetermined theme or topic and then talk about anything but. There will be tangents. There will not be spoiler alerts. Consider yourselves warned. On this episode, time travel.
Yeah, let's go to time travel.
All right.
Time travel.
So we had Bill and Ted, Excellent Adventure, Star Trek, First Contact. What else? 12 Monkeys?
12 Monkeys for me.
All right. Yeah.
So where do you guys want to start?
I selected, I'll start.
Go for it.
I picked Bill and Ted because it has like sentimental value to me. I remember loving it as a kid, and I watched it, and I actually loved it a lot less this time through. But it does deal with time travel. I liked that it kind of dealt with the possibility of changing time, and it got a little confusing at the end, which actually I less than loved, but I like the idea of altering the course of what's going on or the course that history was following because of moving around in time. So those were the reasons that I selected that for my pick.
Yeah, see, I don't know that it actually dealt with consequences of time travel that well. I mean, when they went back and then came back to the present time, nothing had changed. Yet the whole movie's kind of predicated on the fact that the people from the future had to come back and make sure things happened right. So from the present on, consequences were there, but from the past to the present, there was really no impact.
Right, and that's one of the things that I was discontented with that I hadn't thought of, you know, as a kid watching it, but it pretty much just didn't make sense. And and that took me out of the movie, whereas it was kind of enjoyable, but I don't know. You can't completely overlook holes like that.
Right, and another part of the time travel, the rules, like every time travel movie has rules that it has to follow when it comes to time travel, and they're always kind of, I don't know, like just weird, arbitrary rules. And for some reason, this one, Rufus made it clear that the time they spend away from the present is still moving forward, which doesn't make sense for a time travel movie. If you go back, why can't you come back to the present the moment you left? Why does the present
exactly
have to keep moving forward? You know, if they had actually gone with that idea, then there's no sense of urgency to get the report done at all.
I think it's hilarious that you guys are taking this movie so seriously.
Well, yeah, I'm a total nerd for time travel movies, I guess, because the concept just, when it's done right, when it's done really well, can just blow your mind, but it's never really handled that well.
I'm just thinking we have these overlords, we have Rufus that are talking with, you know, 80s surfer dude, Southern California drawl. Like, it's obviously a playful kids movie. And
I think
they're just trying to bring characters in from different times, and that's about as much thought into time travel as they probably put. We're going to go back in time, and we're going to find some crazy characters, and we're going to make a funny movie.
But I think that exactly that is a weakness for the movie, for you know, I don't think we can completely excuse that, and I think that it's less, I don't know, for me, watching it this time, it was less entertaining because of that, and I think entertainment really was their only goal, but when there's something like that, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's really distracting, kind of like driving on the highway, and you're like, cool, I know I'm supposed to drive between these lines, and then there's the construction going on, like lights on the side of the road, and it's distracting. That's what these plot holes were like watching Bill and Ted's. I was like, don't take it too seriously. I was trying to like be a sport, but like I was inhibited in my enjoyment because of that. And I also think if we're talking about how well this movie deals with the concept of time travel, this one's just pretty much going to lose.
True. Yeah, I tried to watch it for the, you know, its intended tone. Yeah, this is just for fun. But because I was watching it for the purpose of discussing it, I had my critic's hat on. Yeah, so I kind of thought the film was overall boring, but a good nostalgia trip. It was kind of, I can see, you know, what was going on in the 80s.
Rocking out in parents' basements.
Yeah, it really made me miss George Carlin, too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that was more sad than I banked on also.
Yeah, I don't understand the desire so strongly for a third one. I think this is mostly a sentimental movie for people because they watched it when they were a kid, and that's the only reason it really gets a pass, because it's really not even that entertaining or funny.
No. Another problem I had with it is I don't know why they couldn't find a more convincing Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, people look more like Abraham Lincoln than that.
Like, I know it's totally nitpicky and totally pretentious, but that I just every time he was on screen, I was like, really? That's who you came up with for Lincoln?
you didn't worry about Genghis Khan and Twinkies or
that
or Napoleon
me.
And ice cream. Like,
well,
I was
the
bothered
Abe Lincoln
with
guy was the
Joan of Arc wanting to lead aerobics. Like, that didn't make any sense to me.
All of it bothered me, but I mean, as far as everyone's look went, like the authenticity of the look, it was just
yeah.
That one was just too much.
Yeah, actually, I had to look up this director after I watched this movie because I just had to see what other movies he had made, if he had ever seen anything that was any decent, and he really hasn't.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Did he
do the sequel?
I don't know, actually. I don't remember. The only thing that I think I've seen that he's even done was the Disney movie Three Musketeers with Charlie Sheen and Kiefer Sutherland and Tim Curry.
Wait, I don't remember this.
I can't remember that.
And what the hell? Chris O'Donnell, that's his name? Chris O'Donnell? Yeah, I mean, this is a movie I saw when I was a kid, for sure, that I haven't seen in 15 years.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've seen it.
Yeah, and so he's never made anything worth a damn, really.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's really trying to make really powerful pieces.
No, he's made some substantial movies that you might be surprised by. Let's see. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
I think I've seen that.
Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
What?
These are all kids' movies.
Yeah, Mr. Holland's Opus.
That's not a kid's movie.
No.
That's kind of a serious movie, right? I don't remember it fully.
I fell asleep when I watched it.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
It was one of those sentimental, let's try and make everyone cry kind of movies.
Wait, that one has music for deaf people, right? Like a concert at the end of it?
Yeah, exactly.
I think I cried when I was a kid.
Yeah, I probably did too. Like
all right, now I'm curious. To see his whole list.
Yeah, I'm looking at the whole list. Pretty much since Rockstar in 2001, I don't recognize any of the movies he's made. It looks like he's done about 10 since then. Oh, some of them straight to video, of course.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was never impressed. Was not impressed with anything I saw. I mean, 101 Dalmatians. I mean, The Mighty Ducks is a classic because I was a kid and it was a movie that I watched. But, I mean, I would never subject any person that didn't grow up with The Mighty Ducks to watching The Mighty Ducks.
Apparently, his debut feature was Critters.
What's that?
Didn't
Critters.
See that.
Massive ball of furry creatures
right.
from another world. Remember that? That's one of those campy horror flicks that I wasn't allowed to watch as a kid.
Wow.
Oh, you know, going back to the film at hand, another thing that really, really bothered me was that there was this sense, or there were references to Bill and Ted being some sort of historical figures for the future, and then it never really explains why. Like, they're almost, like, worshipped by the future people. They go into the future accidentally. The future people really say absolutely nothing to or about them.
Eritar was the reason.
Yeah, because of the Wild Stallions. Their music apparently unites the whole world under the banner of rock and roll.
Did it really explain that?
Kind of. I mean, they touch on that. And actually, from what I've heard, that's what the third Bill and Ted is going to be about, because they never got around to it.
Yeah, I had heard that too, but it just felt too open-ended for me. That, like, it just didn't explain that nearly enough. Like, I was waiting for something to happen in the course of the movie that would warrant this at all. Like, that kind of admiration just doesn't exist toward any person, like, in this time, or has it really that much in the past. That bothered me.
Yeah, the future of this movie looked really boring. It's like everyone looks and acts the same. It's like we all just stand around in our shiny suits and play air guitar.
Well, that's what it's going to be, you know? As we get better and more unified with our rock and roll, we'll realize that we don't need to be individuals. That's the future.
That's peace, huh? The lack of individuality.
Yep. Yeah. It didn't really inspire many ideas in me.
No, I mean, it was kind of weird for me to hear a faggot joke in a context where it would seem to be acceptable. But that was, that was 1989. I was like, oh yeah, that was a totally different time.
Well, people are still making faggot jokes now.
Right, but not in like a mainstream movie directed towards teens.
Not towards kids, really. It's kids. Yeah.
I guess it was weird because it was done in an acceptable context for the time.
I was going to say, I feel like the word gay was acceptable when we were kids, too. And sort of throughout our lifetime, we've seen the acceptance of that word pretty much just drop to zero. Or at least there's been good attempts for it.
Right. I mean, I remember using those words all the time in, like, junior high. But now it's like I hear it and I'm like, ooh, that makes me uncomfortable.
Exactly. Yeah, using terms about homosexuality as a derogatory is completely unacceptable and makes me cringe now. But I guess, I don't know, back then it was different.
Maybe
not. But
it was still a funny, you know, just it was just a funny insult. I mean, you even think, you look at the advancement of gay rights, even over the last 5 years, it's really been the last decade where it's just skyrocketed.
It feels like it's going pretty slow to me. I feel like it's just such a no-brainer that it's just can't believe we're still dealing with stuff this stupid.
No, I'm the same. It's like, really? You know, what year is it?
Can't we just move on from, you know, things that really don't matter at all? Gay rights should be a non-issue at all. It shouldn't even be in a discussion.
Right.
Focus on real problems, guys.
But it will be. It looks like it will be for some time.
Well, Jesus says no.
And so does Mitt Romney.
Do you think he's going to get that nomination? Yeah.
I'd say he's probably the most likely, but I'm not following it that close. But here's my segue for this. Speaking of a collective hive mind of idiocy, the Republicans, let's move on to the Borg.
Excellent segue. Good one. So,
all right,
Ryan,
so
your pick.
Star Trek First Contact. I don't know if any of you guys are Star Trek fans. I didn't even care to ask. I am. I'm an admitted Trekkie. I haven't watched the original series all the way through, but I have watched the Next Generation and blah, 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 blah. And I particularly like Next Generation, and this is my favorite of the movies in the Next Generation series of Star Trek movies. Obviously, time travel, they fly into a time warp. And I think it's a pretty good movie. I think there's some awesome character arcs. I like the subplots. I like the character development.
All right. Yeah, I grew up on Star Trek watching Next Generation. But once I moved away from home, I kind of stopped caring about these characters. I mean, specifically the Next Generation characters. I've kind of recently gotten back into the original Trek because of the J.J. Abrams reboot, which is a hell of a lot of fun. But as for Next Generation, like, I found this movie to be, it felt like to me to be a glorified episode of the show. It didn't feel to me like an epic, you know, sci-fi movie. I just found myself not really caring about these characters, probably because I don't care about them anymore when I stopped watching the show.
See, I don't know if that's fair. I feel like the movie did pretty good at introducing the characters as though you didn't know them, so you didn't need to watch the show to know what was going on to some degree. While it was still annoying, like an annoying amount of recap for people who do watch the show.
Right. Lynn, have you watched the show?
Well, yeah, I grew up on it. It was like my parents' favorite show when I was growing up. So
gotcha. So I was wondering if any of us had not, you know, not seen the show, if it really does stand on its own away from the show, if you can just jump in without any kind of prior knowledge of the characters. And my impression was you kind of need to know a little backstory.
Yeah. See, the problem, I have no objective viewpoint from this because I watched it when I was a kid, and then I recently rewatched the entire series last year. I guess it was technically last year. So I'd watched all 7 seasons and rewatched all the movies, and so I'm pretty refreshed with these characters, but it definitely reads as a glorified episode. It's like an episode where they just had a shitload of money, and so they were just gonna go all crazy, and they had awesome shots like the opening shot with the Borg in the face and the Borg cube, the pan out that goes for a day and a half. But, you know, they had money for things like that. And I thought, I just think it's great stuff.
Yeah, speaking of the opening, I'm usually a big fan and a proponent of opening credits, but these are the most boring and blasé opening credits I've seen. It was just the fade-in of the text and just repeated it, like, you know, 3 or 4 dozen times with each new name, but it was the same thing over and over. Usually there's something going on in the background or, you know, they vary it a little bit, but it was just like 2-3 minutes straight of just the same thing over and over.
I did fast-forward them. I was like, I can't watch this. I gotta go. I've got places to be.
I think it might have a lot to do with Frakes. What's his name? Number 2 being the director. I really don't know if he's got the technical ability to be a major film director. I think he's good for television.
I think he made an expensive episode of television that was 190.
Agree with that.
Exactly.
I would completely agree with that.
It doesn't feel like a J.J. Abrams movie where it's a. Come on.
I kind of wonder if the J.J. Abrams reboot is coloring my opinion of the older Star Trek, because in J.J. Abrams' movie, things are moving so fast. I mean, you see clips. I remember seeing for the first time Captain Kirk running down a corridor in the Enterprise, and I'm like, I never used to see that. Nobody ran in the television series. They just kind of, like, I mean, especially in this movie, I never really felt that urgency. It's like,
that's how they are in the series. And so it's true to the series. The movie is true to the series, whereas J.J. Abrams is completely new and different idea entirely. So I can't even compare those two movies to each other.
No, I don't think it's fair. compare. But I'm just wondering, I think the new Star Trek is totally shading my opinion of the old Star Trek.
That might be a good thing. I don't know. Like, I like the old Star Trek, but I really don't. I don't know. Was it really that revolutionary?
Absolutely.
I don't see how it was in the sci-fi world.
The show or the
show
the old
is absolutely revolutionary.
Yeah, the original Star Trek was the first of its kind.
It was like the first real sci-fi show.
How did it differ?
It also
from...
had the first interracial kiss, I believe.
Yeah.
They call it black and white are the same race, but
it brought sci-fi into the mainstream home. Like, you know, whereas some people would go and pay their 50 cents to see the B campy sci-fi flick at the theater, this kind
right.
of popularized it, made it mainstream.
But it has good themes. All the episodes tend to have good themes.
Oh yeah, I mean the overall theme of the whole thing was about tolerance and acceptance of new and different species, and it was all kind of about unifying humankind.
Yeah,
well there you go.
And if you watch
Well, I don't know the history of the television show that well, or of sci-fi really that well. So
yeah. I think it was good. I think I liked the character arcs. I mean, let's not forget about the character. I love the character of Data, and I loved his advancement. I liked his interactions with the Queen of the Borg.
No, that was another issue I had. It's a criticism when I think the android has more emotion than everyone else on the show. I found like most of the cast on this movie were kind of lifeless and just, I don't know, they were acting like they were in a television series, which I really can't fault them for, because that's really what this was. It just wasn't dynamic. It didn't have any sense of urgency, and I felt like there were several kind of plot holes or plot points that were totally glossed over by a sentence. Like, after they finish the mission, get back up to the Enterprise, there's, I think Worf says it, the Vulcans didn't detect us because we were hiding behind the moon or something. Like, you know, just totally, you know, putting a patch over a glaring hole. Like, why wouldn't the Vulcans have noticed the Enterprise? And he just totally cast it off with just one single sentence. They don't even really address it.
I hadn't caught that, but that is something that I'm typically annoyed with. Just, like, one sentence explanations after the fact. This is why this made sense. When it really doesn't.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but let's talk about the actual time travel involved. That, too, felt like it was the explanation, or like what was actually happening was kind of the same situation. They're going through the warp hole, and someone just explains what's happening. You know, like, just as matter-of-factly, like, oh, you know, it's a quantum flux in the, you know, time-space continuum, blah, 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 whatever. We're going through it. We're going back in time.
Yeah. See, the problem is they've gone through time multiple times as a crew.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it definitely felt like it was nothing new.
Yeah. This. Oh, shit. We're going back in time, you know. I've gotten used to that, you know. You definitely tell that, you know, if I was going back in time, I think I'd be a little bit more animated about the fact that was happening. It's definitely
right.
Something that happens, stuff like that happens, you know. It's a daily thing to them. But I totally agree with you. I thought the concept was interesting, though, that the Borg, when they were dying, tried to open up a warp hole, kill off the humanity, but I don't know. My least favorite part of the movie is actually James Cromwell and his character, the rocket scientist guy. He's probably
There
wasn't
really a lot of development there.
Hardly anything. He's just an alky, and he's just really angry, and that's supposed to be a caricature of how we are right now, I think.
Yeah, it did seem like it. It did seem like they were trying to draw this contrast between, you know, this is the future that we're headed toward, like, a clean Enterprise, like, there's no dirt anywhere, and then they, like, go to the past, which is, like, right now, what year was First Contact
269, I think, is what was it? I'd have to look it up.
I think it was supposed to be in, like, 2064.
Yeah, something like that, and they're, like, sleeping in tents. Why are they controlling rocket ships?
Well, it's after World War.
Oh, right. I'd forgotten about that. It still just didn't seem like any sort of future from now that, I don't know. If anything, seemed like the 90s. Or even the 80s or something.
Yeah, well, it was made in the 90s. You know, a 90s version of what 80 years from now was going to be. It really kind of bothered me how quick they were able to just go ahead and travel back to their present time at the end. They're just like, all right, well, let's go back. Let's open up the wormhole and see you bye. And the movie ends.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I guess my major problems with it is that they jump from, you know, point to point with – a minimal amount of obvious explanation, and I don't know. I didn't like it as much as I remember liking it when I saw it, when I was very much involved in watching Star Trek.
Yeah, I had the same sense that with both films, actually, that we've talked about so far, is that I just was able to enjoy things for pretty much no good reason in the past, and as I looked at it now, I was just less entertained.
I think it's just a matter of taste changing, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. I've actually been watching a lot of movies I watched as little as like 5 or 6 years ago, and my taste has evolved quite a bit. But, you know, that's what happens. All right, so on to 12 Monkeys, my pick.
That movie reminded me of why I love movies. It's perfect. Gilliam's just a master.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about 12 Monkeys specifically is usually Terry Gilliam's films are plagued with problems and studio intervention. But this is one of the rare ones where he actually was just given the money by the studio, and they said, as long as it's less than 2 hours and 15 minutes, just make what you want. So this is Gilliam unobstructed.
Unleashed, and it's perfect.
I don't find it perfect even a little bit.
Really?
I thought there were so many things that were so convenient in that movie. With the time travel, Bruce Willis is always landing exactly where he wants to land and running into the same people every time he travels from time. And it just didn't seem like that was possible. Like, he was always landing right where he needed to be to run into Brad Pitt's character or to run into the girl he falls in love with. I don't remember the name of that actress, but...
Madeline Stowe, I think. Or do you mean the character name?
Oh, no, I meant the actress, but the character name, I don't remember either.
I could see that. I mean, I'd say it's more... It tries to play more to coincidence, especially with running into Brad Pitt's character, than it does, like, meaningful drops. I mean, I don't know, there are a few aspects of that that kind of bug me, but because of the craft work of Terry Gilliam and just how just amazingly imaginative his movies are, that's something I'm willing to just kind of, like, shove to the side.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it. I feel I'm just
with nobody else.
His movies are a pleasure to look at so much that I just can't. I mean, I obviously care about the story enough, but just visually, his movies just draw me the whole time.
No, but Clayton, I do understand that criticism quite a bit. I mean, especially towards the end when they're at the airport and Bruce Willis leaves the phone call saying it wasn't the 12 Monkeys, it was this other guy, and then the dude from the cell next to him shows up right away saying, "Yeah, we just got your message and deciphered it." It seemed really convenient.
Yeah, I was really bothered by that. That was probably my main annoyance. No, I would say that was my second annoyance. My first one was Bruce Willis's behavior the whole time. It just seemed like he was always being accused of being a madman or being out of his mind, and he was never doing anything to disprove it. If anything, his behavior every time he went to the past, so strange. He was always staring off into nowhere, thinking about stuff and like mumbling things under his breath. It's just like, if you have a job to do, that's not the way that you're going to get it done. I was a little bit bothered by that.
Right. Well, they did address that by saying the effects of time travel are pretty severe. But also, I think the movie was, I don't know if it was totally effective on it, but was trying to make you wonder whether or not this entire thing is actually in his head and he is a psychotic, you know, schizophrenic.
Right. And I did pick up on that the point was for the audience to be wondering that as much as the people around him. But I still feel like, you know, we're following the character, and so at least the constant should be that his character is on one side or the other, is that he knows, you know. I mean, those are really my only problems with it. Everything else, I thought it was pretty entertaining, but I just wasn't believing it the whole time, I guess.
Well, are you familiar with any of other Gilliam's work?
Sure.
Brazil?
Time Bandits.
Brazil, I love. Time Bandits, yeah. I've been meaning to get to, but I haven't yet. Brazil's one of my favorite movies, I would say, probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Adventures of Baron Munchausen is another one I like quite a bit. Tideland. It seems like Gilliam is very divisive. Either you love him, you hate him, or people either, I mean, it's even within his films, they either think it's great or they think it's a piece of crap.
But still, I'm looking at this film just like standing on its own, and for me, it was maybe a 3 out of 4. How do you guys think it dealt with time travel, with the concept of time and continuity and all that?
Well, it wasn't even trying time travel at all. You know, was he in his head? Was this a story that was all even real, or was he actually traveling through time? All valid criticism, but I thought if you were to follow it literally, then yeah, I think they don't break the canon of what happens throughout the history of the time travel, so they don't break any rules.
Right. And this more than probably not as much as Star Trek, but definitely show the effects and the consequences of going back and changing things. Although the future remained unchanged, but I think it kind of dealt with it in a way like all the time traveling they're doing, of course, once they go back, it's already been done. It's already in the past. So the future, of course, would remain unchanged.
I liked that. I wasn't bothered by any holes like Bill and Ted's or something like that. So in the way of time travel, I felt like it was probably my favorite of the three. Actually, you know what? In just about every way, I think 12 Monkeys was my favorite of the three.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, even though you didn't like it that much?
Even though I didn't like it that much. Yeah, not a great week. I picked a bad one.
Well, I think it's been a great discussion for this episode. Yeah, I agree. 12 Monkeys is my favorite of the three. And I think even though it wasn't, time travel wasn't really the forefront of the film like the other two, I think it actually, for its rules and its usage of time travel, was probably the better of the three.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Rock and roll.
If you want to get involved in the discussion, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/threefilmegos, or follow us on Twitter @threefilmegos, or email us @threefilmegos@gmail.com, or even comment @threefilmegos.podomatic.com, where you can also donate and subscribe to the show. Music provided by 90s Television. You can hear more of their music on Facebook. On our next episode, we'll be discussing the films we absolutely hated while watching. We've been the Three Film Egos, and all we see are dead people.